The views expressed on this program are the views of the individual broadcaster and do not necessarily reflect the view of Wesleyan University or the WESU management. Hello, and welcome to Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, a progressive-minded radio show about faith and action, coming to you from Wesleyan University's WESU, 88.1 FM, Middletown, and WESUFM.org, providing community radio that matters. I'm Maria Johnson. Today, we visit with Gina Barreca, feminist author, columnist, UConn professor, and my new BFF, whose most recent collection, If You Lean In, Will Men Just Look Down Your Blouse, includes an essay about why she left the Catholic Church several years ago and has stayed away ever since, though not exactly peacefully, since no other church fits the bill for her. In fact, she says she's still working through her fractious relationship to Mother Church in therapy sessions. And you know I'm not prone to proselytizing, but I did try to tell her she should just come back. Gina will tell us why she can't, and we'll talk about a lot of other things after this message.
Many dogs and cats spend endless days indoors staring at the wall, living for the moment when you will come home and tell them you love them, take them out, and make a fuss over them. Dogs and cats need physical exercise and mental stimulation, things to do and think about in order to be healthy and happy. Please, set time aside for them and give them a real life and real love. For more information, please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals at 757-622-PETA or helpinganimals.com. That's helpinganimals.com.
Gina Barreca, as I live and breathe.
Yes, I'm so happy to be talking to you.
I don't know. This is going to sound pathetic because I thought I had enough friends, but I really want to be your friend.
Okay, you got it. Oh. That wasn't hard. Anything else you want?
And since we're friends, I can confess to you and the two or three listeners I have that I'm really glad we're doing this by phone because I would have spent an hour trying to pick out an outfit.
Oh, never, never,
no?
Never.
That
I understand what you mean. But
you know,
because this is not something that we need to think about.
Okay,
we're adorable.
Oh,
you can
man.
Tell that even over the radio.
Shall I tell about how I even though I never do this, I had to send you a couple of selfies of me enjoying your book under the hair dryer at the hair salon, and then on the train to somewhere, because I just thought, you ought to know. You ought to know how.
And those are like my favorite thing. I mean, this is a newish book that came out in April. So, you know, for me, that still counts as new.
Yeah.
And it's so exciting to see somebody just holding it. It's just, you know, it's just an amazing idea. And then to think of somebody enjoying the book.
You know?
It's a radical thought. It's a radical. So you gave me a great gift.
Well,
with those pictures.
No charge.
It's
it was
good.
On the house.
So what did, I mean, here's the thing. You're coming at this from a very different angle.
I suppose.
Most of the people that I've spoken to.
Well, how great is that?
I love this. I love this. Because most of the time, you know, I'm a professor at the University of Connecticut, and you know, I write for the Hartford Courant,
right.
And now the great, you know, fabulous thing over the last couple of years is that the columns now are syndicated,
yeah.
So they go out nationally and actually internationally, and so I get a lot of comments from
Excellent.
People in different ways in different places, and yet. The one that I think that attracted the most attention is the one that I think piqued your interest, particularly.
Right.
That's about called When It Comes to Faith, I Don't Have a Prayer.
Well, I guess we should say at the outset that your book is titled, If You Lean In, Will Men Just Look Down Your Blouse?
That's right. Questions and Thoughts for Loud, Smart Women in Turbulent Times.
The title gives you a sense, gives listeners and readers a sense of the humor, but maybe what's not
discernible from the title is just how wise it is.
Oh, thank you.
It really is. And I guess that's what resonated with me about that particular piece. But it's pretty true of just about all the pieces in the book, is that while you will laugh, you will smile, there's such truth with a capital T, I think.
Thank you. And it really, this book probably, when people ask, because, you know, the first book that I did, it was called They Used to Call Me Snow White, But I Drifted. It's about the differences between men and women's humor. And then I did Perfect Husbands and Other Fairy Tales. I did a book on revenge. And the most recent book that I did before this one was called It's Not That I'm Bitter, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying About Visible Panty Lines and Conquered the World. And they're, you know, they're all funny, and they're very much about my life. I actually did a memoir called Babes in Boyland, A Personal History of Coeducation in the Ivy League, that was about being one of the first women at Dartmouth, and I was the first one in my family to go to college, or the first girl in my family to go to college, and so it was, you know, an examination of that. But this book, I would say, if you lean in, is certainly the most personal.
Yeah.
So the fact that you're talking about, you know, wisdom being in it, it really, it's a book where I took some risks. I talked about the fact that, you know, my mother died when I was very young, and I talk about the questions that I wished I could have asked her before she died.
Yeah.
The questions that I've held as somebody now almost 60, that I wish I had known. And a friend asked me, because she, in fact, had a terminal illness, and she wanted to know what her daughter would be asking. You know, what questions would her daughter want? And I just put it out there. And then actually her daughter came to a reading I did at the 92nd Street Y of the book, and it was a real moment of connection. It's amazing how different parts of your lives are sewn together, you know, by certain moments. So the book is very personal, and thank you for saying it's wise. It's certainly personal. I hope so far it's wise.
You know, I mean, just it might seem abrupt to go from that particular example involving your friend to this, but I mean, if I were to suddenly develop a crush on someone, you would tell me to come to my senses.
Yes, there is a section on how you don't stop getting crushes just because you're married or you're middle-aged or because, in fact, you love your spouse or anything. People get crushes their whole lives. And the first thing that people need to know about that is that it happens all the time, and there's nothing special about you just because you wake up one day at, you know, 46 and go, you know, that new guy at work is really interesting. Or people reconnect on Facebook and they go back to thinking that the boyfriend that they had or the girlfriend that they had, you know, in high school really was the one. That's just because you haven't spoken to them in 20 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, they live on the other side of the country where the person that, you know, you see every day gets, it doesn't fire up your imagination the way that used to happen. So, yeah, I deal with crushes in actual adult life because I think that that's a...
You're making me think it's like the same chemical thing, the crush and the just new reconnection with somebody.
Absolutely. And you know what? I think that the whole big thing is that we literally over-romanticize it, that we make it into, like, you know, people think it's a mystery or that it's, you know, some big epiphany or something like this. It's like, this happens all the time. Don't get over yourself. It's not something extraordinary. And I think if people, you know, that fewer people would be making themselves miserable and, like, gnawing the flesh off their wrists if they just knew that this happened constantly.
It sounds like you may be speaking from experience.
Experience, from, you know, I mean, suddenly there's, I mean, this happened. I get crushes all the time. I have adorable, you know, students, and I see them, and they come, and they're like, and they're just out of the wrapping. And, you know, the nice thing, of course, is that you can't, you know, there are so many rules in play. We would never even think of acting out on any of this, but it doesn't mean you don't think, oh, wow, that's an amazing, you know, isn't he cute? It's like, it's not that you stop looking. I mean, we know that men look at young women, but it's still sort of under wraps that women look at young men, and because we disguise it by saying things like, oh, he'd be nice for my niece. You know? Yeah, right. I know what you're thinking, honey. He'd be nice for my niece.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, right.
You see, now the fact that I could ask...
Let's just say what it is. It's not that big a deal.
Right.
You just don't act on it.
But I'm just aware that the fact that I could ask you, are you speaking from experience? I mean, that just tells you what how I already feel like such a close friend that I can get that personal.
Well, I'm honored. I'm really honored. But I feel that way about you, Maria, so we're good.
good. Well, we should get back to the essay at hand because, and I'm going to ask you to read it for us.
Oh, I would be honored. I'd love that.
It has to do with something, talk about universal experiences, you know, just...
Struggling with faith,
but even particularly with the church, you know.
Yes, with the church.
And you're listening to humorist Gina Borecca, whose new book, If You Lean In, Will Men Just Look Down Your Blouse, tells the bittersweet tale of her struggle with the Catholic Church. This is Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, coming to you from WESU 88.1 FM Middletown and WESUFM.org, providing community radio that matters.
That's me in the spotlight, losing my religion.
I grew up in a big Catholic family. My mother, again, who died young, was French-Canadian. My father's family, who raised me, were Sicilian. So we're talking candle lighting, mantilla wearing, wailing over the coffin, Catholic. And again, as somebody who's born in 1957, you know, the church had, I like to think the church has changed. I've actually done fundraisers for Catholic charities. I've done, the Tabor House in Hartford is run by nuns. And when I can't remember, they were the sisters of, I don't remember which ones they were, but their order. But these sisters asked me to come and give a thing. And I thought, great, you know, these sisters of charity or whatever asked me to do this, and I thought, well, to ask me to be their keynote at a fundraiser, they've got to be pretty hip. I met these women, they're like wearing, you know, Eileen Fisher and earrings. You know, these are not women that I grew up with. These were hip, interesting, funny women. And I was thinking, I said, when I grew up, you know, the church had one lesson for girls, and that was to remember that sex was something dirty and disgusting that you save for someone you love. And that was it. Okay? And, you know, 28 years of therapy has helped. But it's really...
Oh, God.
I mean, I needed to get away from that. It was all... There was not... I like to think, again, the church has sort of evolved, but, you know, it was all about going straight to hell. Everything was going straight to hell. So, I mean...
But the idea of saving something disgusting for someone you love.
Someone you love. But that wasn't that it? Sex is dirty and disgusting, you say, for someone you love.
Oh, gosh.
So...
So shall we just dive right in?
So here's chapter 14 in If You Lean In, Will Men Just Look Down Your Blouse, published by St. Martin's Press, 2016. When faith's needed, I don't have a prayer. I admire people of faith, but I am made nervous by those who live in a spiritually gated community. God knows I'm not religious, but I consider it a privilege to know people who are. Just as I am honored to know people who are brilliant mathematicians, even though I personally still count on my fingers. Good folks have offered to instruct me on both areas of study. Yet despite my suspecting my life, not to mention my afterlife, might be better for it, I thank them and decline. But I'm not too proud to ask for their help when, for example, death and taxes find me at their doors. Here's my deal with religion. I'm a believer in the power of other people's faith. I do not share their faith, but I have belief in their enviable belief that someone, often with a capital S, for someone, some entity somewhere is looking out for us. So I'm entirely willing to throw my lot in with theirs, in fact, and I have no shame in asking a friend to say a prayer for me or one of my loved ones when necessary. I feel like their prayers have an express route and a tracking number, whereas my own efforts would wind up in the dead letter office. If I'm asked to help, I tell people I can offer them a good thought, a hug, a meatloaf, a book, or a pudding. I'm not up to saying a prayer because I wouldn't know what to do anymore. The old ones I repeat so entirely by rote they sound like jumping rope rhymes. The new ones, the one I try to make up from the heart, sound overwrought, pretentious, and absurd in equal measures. Trust me when I say I'm better at meatloaf. My cooking is more sincere. The ingredients are fresher, less adulterated, and more worthy. It's not that my family didn't try. I was raised a Roman Catholic, but it was the kind of domesticated Catholicism that focused mostly on the length of your skirt rather than, say, the depth of your penitential observance. Certainly, I identified as a Catholic. I was helped by the fact that the years of my childhood were a big time for nuns, right? There was The Singing Nun, completely Grammy Award-winning single. There was Rosalind Russell playing a nun in a successful movie, The Trouble with Angels, which was directed by Ida Lupino, no less. There was The Flying Nun, complete with bubblegum cards, starring Sally Field. And although I didn't go to Catholic school because it was too expensive, I knew several nuns since we lived right near a church. Most of them would stop by to chat with my aunts, my Italian aunts. This was a big deal. At least one of my aunts had attempted to join an order but couldn't make it. So I suspect that there was a sense of wistfulness about her friendliness. There was also a little resentment. I remember her joking, "Why are they called nuns? None of this, none of that." Yet my background in religious instruction was no less effective than my training in arithmetic, no more effective than my training in arithmetic. Most of my serious personal religious instruction came from reading leaflets. All of this is true, Maria. You know, I didn't make any of this up.
Yeah, I believe it.
There were dozens of them, these leaflets, the new ones every month covering everything from, quote, is it love or lust, end quote, and, quote, the Catholic Girl's Guide to Teen Life, end quote, to impure thoughts, danger zone. I think that was my favorite. I read that one a lot. All available for a dime's donation. They were, in effect, Cliff's Notes for the souls. They summed up, dumbed down, and misled. They inoculated me against having to deal with genuine moral questions by diverting me with the difference between petting and heavy petting. I don't think I know the difference. I stopped going to church at 16 when my mother died. She'd been a devout Catholic, my mother, dying with her rosaries wrapped or woven between her fingers. But she wanted to be cremated. Our parish disapproved and refused to grant my mother a funeral mass. Mm. A family friend who happened to be a priest said prayers at her wake, but he did it not as a representative of the church, but as a personal favor. Is it a surprise, then, since I've learned to count on the faith of favors, Lawford, is it a surprise, then, that since that time I've learned to count on the faith of favors offered with love and freely giving? Kindness is a convincing prayer.
Mm.
That's the end.
That's beautiful.
Thank you. It really was. It was my mother, really, we would go to Mass. We'd go to the early Masses before school. I mean, she was, there was nobody who counted on the church more, who loved the church. And I'm not sure why she wanted to be cremated. It was in the early 70s. And I know that some churches allowed it, but we were in, dare I say, parochial parish. Mm. And they said no. And we abided by her wishes, as of course one would. And that was it. I mean, I couldn't do that because the church had so betrayed her.
Yeah.
And I've tried. I mean, I really, and again, I love the church. I travel a lot. I give a lot of talks around the country. I will go to churches in different places because I love the churches. I love the buildings. I light candles.
Yeah.
I send my thoughts. I don't leave a meatloaf in the church because I don't think that's appropriate. But I mean, I really, you know, I send my bits, but really the closest I get to prayer or to official religion is asking other people to pray for me. But I really believe in that.
Okay. I have a number of thoughts.
Please.
And I'm going to forget some.
Okay. All right. Well, okay.
I'm in my 50s, too, and I don't know how you roll, but so I'm just going to go randomly. First of all, I want to say, and I'm not prone to proselytizing. I would be the last person to say, you know, you really should go to church.
I'd
never say that. But I just feel like, and again, you may not be able to tell from my last name, but I'm Italian.
Yeah.
So I know from grudges.
Yeah, right.
You know what I'm saying?
That's perfect.
And it sounds like you may be holding a grudge kind of in out of loyalty to your mother, when really so much of the church, even if it just maybe is the external trappings of candles and so on, it seems to resonate with you, and there seems a little wistfulness about...
Oh, a longing, more than a wistfulness.
Yeah.
There's a longing. I wish I could do this. I do.
Uh-huh. If you're just joining us, this is an interview with the wise and witty Gina Barreca, author and Hartford Current columnist and UConn professor, talking about why she left the Catholic Church, why she can't come back, and why no other church will do. This is Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, coming to you from WESU 88.1 FM Middletown and WESUFM.org, providing community radio that matters.
Millions of people all over the world go hungry while we waste our land and water resources. Did you know that raising animals for human consumption uses 8 times as much water as growing fruits, vegetables, and grains? And that the same amount of land can produce 17 times more soybean protein than meat protein? If you care about animals, good health, and the earth, please consider becoming a vegetarian. The lives you save may include your own. For free, tasty vegetarian recipes and a DVD, call PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, at 1-888-VEG-FOOD. That's 1-888-VEG-FOOD. Visit online at goveg.com. That's goveg.com. This message has been sponsored by PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. Thank you.
14 years, 30 minutes, 15 seconds. I've held this grudge. 11 songs.
Well, you know what? That's funny you should say that, because I remember. I'm not. If the story is too long, you and I have to have lunch or maybe dinner, because then we could have a bottle of wine.
Okay.
but I remember saying, during a period of just really dig in the heels, not gonna go to church, you know, ness.
Yeah.
I said to someone, because I was a newspaper reporter in Providence, and they assigned me to cover, to do a piece about an altar server. You know, they kind of was an 11th hour thing where they forgot that they needed a story for Easter, and they just said, Maria, go, you know.
Yeah.
So anyway, I find myself in a church, and I'm in the sacristy with my little notebook trying to just work, you know.
Right.
But I mean, it's really kind of all very sensory and resonant, and oh, hell, ever God, talk about needing therapy. Anyway,
right.
I remember saying to the lovely director of religious ed who was in the sacristy with me, I go, you know, it's not easy being a lapsed Catholic at Easter time.
Yeah, right.
And her very kind of cogent reply was, well, you don't have to be.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
So when you say it's hard, or, you know, that's what comes to mind is, well, you can figure this out, you know.
Right, but I don't feel, I mean, again, to speak very candidly here, I don't feel welcome. I mean, you know, not only because of the grudge, and I think you're very astute to say that was, you know, that's certainly a part of it. But I don't feel welcome as a woman. I don't feel welcome as somebody of with a decidedly, you know, liberal viewpoint.
Yeah.
You know, I love the nuns on the bus. I mean, I think that, you know, that there are real reasons that, you know, that really great things that the church can do. But as far as I'm concerned, I mean, I respect the Catholic Church too much to just do the version of it that I want.
Oh.
I mean, this is an institution that has, you know, built the foundation that has its own serious beliefs. I mean, when a student comes into my classroom, they don't get to pick and choose what parts of the course they want to take. They take the course. So if I say women, of course you have to allow them to practice control over their own reproductive functions. Of course that women have to be fully part of the hierarchy of the church and not just servers and sweepers and cleaners. And, you know, the church says no.
Okay.
And I don't feel that as somebody who did believe. If I respected the church less in a way, it would be easier.
Yeah, I
but,
totally get
you know,
that.
I don't feel like I can go in and say, well, I'll take the, you know, the cat, what is it, the, what do they call them? The
Chinese
cafeteria
menu approach.
Catholics.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I'll take this and I'll take this. It's like, nah.
Really? Really? You have to be all in?
Don't you think so?
No.
You're the Catholic.
No. I do not think so. And, and I will furthermore say, and again, at the risk of proselytizing, I beg you not to get me wrong here.
No, but I'm thinking at the risk of excommunication, honey.
Well, no. Wow, no. That won't happen. I mean, we've had this radio show for going on 5 years, and maybe they're not listening. Nobody has said, hey, stop that.
Yeah.
But anyway, the thing I was going to say is that, and this interestingly, since you're a newspaper columnist, comes to me from Anna Quinlan.
I think
I have a collection at home of something like, I think it's called Why I'm Still Catholic or something, because I'm always looking for reasons to confirm why I'm still Catholic.
Right.
And I think she said, I loved it, she said, it's my church. It's my church. And they would love it if I left. I am not leaving.
Yeah.
You know, that doesn't help.
No.
Okay.
It doesn't because I've never been able to feel it's my church. Mm-hmm. I always felt, I mean, again, I wish I could feel about them. As one of the first women at the last Ivy League school to go male, you know, I felt like I had to not just, you know, sort of break down barriers, but I had to, you know, I felt like I was sneaking in, you know, steal something.
Yeah.
But then by the end, very much felt like, you know, from the inside, I could dismantle some of the, not actually, you know, just avoid, but actually dismantle some of the, you know, model ways to dismantle for the next generations, how things could change. I don't feel that way about the church.
Even with Pope Francis at the helm.
Now, I think he's great. And I've written, I think that this sounds like, you know, he seems like the best of the whole bunch.
Yeah.
Certainly with Benedict, he was terrifying.
Right.
He seems great. But I, you know, I'm not seeing structural changes.
No.
I'm not seeing... you know, homosexuality, not, you know, getting off the DSM of sins, you know? You know, don't you think that there should be, like, removal? I still think that, you know, abstinence is taught in schools as if that's going to work.
Yeah.
And then, you know, if you're raped by your uncle at 12, you're still not allowed to terminate a pregnancy without the idea that you're going to hell.
I know. No, believe me. Let
you
us
know?
Count
so
the ways.
Those are my, I can't, I mean, I look at that and I think, okay, am I in the position to negotiate this? I don't feel like I can, if I'm going to have, see, this is the thing, very seriously, Maria, like, if I'm going to have a personal relationship with God where I don't feel I need to go through the church, which is firstly not how I feel because I was raised as a Catholic, then I'll become a Protestant, but I'm not a Protestant. I'm a Catholic.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I can't be a Catholic, but I can't be anything else. That's why it's like being an alcoholic. You know, there should be meetings. You know? I mean, really, I can't be something else. I've gone to other churches.
Yeah, it won't take. I know.
No, because it's, but that's it. It's like being an alcoholic.
Yeah.
It's like, this is it. I'm a lifelong Catholic, but I cannot do this. For me, it's poisonous.
Wow.
It makes me feel diminished. It, you know, I wish I could. I wish I could, as I see other people do, whom I admire.
Yeah.
Just embrace the loving, generous, open, glorious, joyous parts of the church. When there was the church, there was that campaign a while ago, come home for Easter.
Yeah.
And it was like, that's great, except you can't come home if, you know,
right,
you're divorced, if you're, you know, if you've ever masturbated. I think that's still a sin.
God.
Right?
Then who are we going to get to say Mass?
Right. But that's the idea. So then you just, okay, but then you say, I'm never going to do it again. Every time you go to confession, you have to say, I'm never going to do it again. Because otherwise then you're lying.
Huh.
So, right?
Well, I have to say, as much as I am your new BFF,
yeah,
you and I diverge on this point of,
well,
having to be.
And that's why I want you to pray for me.
Because I think we can come as we are, and we can take the parts that resonate and leave the rest. I mean, I'm a Democrat, but I don't believe everything.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
But no, and that's a really good analogy. And I wish I could feel that way.
Huh.
But doesn't the church say that you have to take it as a package deal?
Yeah, all right, let me tell you a story. You'll love this, because okay, it's about an Italian and a nun. So I went on a retreat once and found myself at a meal with a nun. And she was the kind of person, you know how they are, they're so great.
Yeah.
You just felt like you could talk, really.
Right.
You know, you could just talk, like you. Anyway, so I said, sister, you know, how do you do it? You know, you're part of this institution, and if it's driving me nuts, how bad must it be for you?
Yeah.
You know? And she was just so sage. She said, okay, so you're driving along at 4 a.m, and there's nobody else on the road, and you get to a red light. Do you stop?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I got it. Like, no, I don't.
I probably do.
You do. Yeah,
I
see?
Do.
See, yeah. Wow.
Yeah. I do. See, that's the whole thing. I do. Because for me, and that may, again, they got me really young in a different way. I do. I follow. And again, not in an unthinking way. I mean, my life is about critical assessment.
Yep.
But
right,
this was supposed to be something beyond, maybe,
but
like, you know, it's
Gina, it's just a human institution, you know what I'm saying?
And it's not supposed to be a human institution.
Well,
it's supposed to be channeling the divine.
All right.
Right?
I don't know what to say.
I mean, I wish, you don't know how much I wish, Maria.
Maybe you should have a drink.
It,
like, have a drink and then go to Mass.
Have a drink and go to Mass. Is that why they do them in the afternoon now?
Because you're just a little too tightly wound.
I mean, this is, but again, I'm willing to accept it with everything else. With everything else, I get to pick and choose. But this says, you know, these are the rules.
Oh, you
and,
know, yeah.
And yeah, I do stop it. I always stop. That's a really interesting analogy. Of course I do. It wouldn't occur to me not to stop. It would not occur to me not to stop. I mean, I really, and again, I admire people who can do it. It's not that I'm not a stickler for rules in most ways.
Yeah, it's,
you know,
interesting.
I mean, I consider myself a troublemaker and a rule breaker.
Yeah, this is interesting.
For this stuff to go, I think it goes so far back. And trust me, the 28 years of therapy is no joke. It's something I talk about all the
yeah.
time. So I admire and envy and long for a better relationship with whatever the divine is out there. And I hope you'll hug it closer to you. And, you know, I know you know what a gift you have in your belief. And again, keep, you know, do what you do, because it gets people to think about it and to talk about it. And, you know, I hope it'll sink in, even to me.
Well, I hope so, too, because there is a lot that's nourishing in it.
Oh, I know.
And it goes so far beyond the stupid hierarchy, you know? I mean, it really... Anyway, I
want to... No, that's good. Don't anyway. I'm listening. I mean, I'm not dismissing what you say.
Well, all right. This is the last thing I'm going to...
Okay.
I want to get to the rest of your essays, because I love this book so much, but... The church aside, I mean, do you feel like there's anything about faith, you know, in God?
Oh, yes, faith, absolutely. And I wish that I didn't feel that the only access that I could have to it was through this one tunnel.
Okay, so you believe in God or something.
It's something.
And
right.
Maybe that's enough. You know?
Not according to the folks backing this whole enterprise.
Oh, no, it's not enough for them. But I'm saying it's enough for you, in which case, fine. Go in peace, my child.
Yeah?
But you do seem to be kind of suffering a bit, too.
Oh, it's a real, no, it's an area of pain. It is a scar that never healed. It's not like this is, you know, I've been through a lot of stuff that, like, it heals up, and there's always a scar. This is like an open wound. No, I'm serious. It's like, I'm the funny lady with the open wound, and this is really one of the things in my life, most things I have settled.
Oh,
and my
so interesting.
Constant going back and forth. I wish, you know, seriously, and people actually, when this faith piece came out, I got literally hundreds of letters and emails from around the country.
Wow.
There were rabbis and Amand, how do you say, I'm so ignorant, you know, and people writing to me and saying, and priests and people, you know, coming back and saying, please consider, and God loves you. And they were, I loved all of them, and I felt embraced by the people who put them through. I mean, I was very impressed. Like I said, if there's something I have faith in, it's other people's faith.
Yes.
I'm just once removed. It's okay.
Right, right. It's I do believe it is okay, except that you're also not okay. You're listening to humorist Gina Barreca, whose new book, If You Lean In, Will Men Just Look Down Your Blouse, tells the bittersweet tale of her struggle with the Catholic Church. This is Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, coming to you from WESU 88.1 FM Middletown and WESUFM.org, providing community radio that matters.
If you care about animals, good health, and the earth, please consider becoming a vegetarian. The lives you save may include your own. For free, tasty vegetarian recipes, write People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, Norfolk, Virginia, 23510.
Desperado, why don't you come to your senses? You've been out riding fences for so long now. Oh, you're a hard one, but I know that you got your reasons.
This is how, like, I don't know what to say, abstract expressionist I am in my Catholicism.
Oh, that's great.
So I belong to a parish, and I also go occasionally to the Mass here at Wesleyan.
Oh, how nice.
Well,
that's great.
Yeah, it is nice. The kids are great, you know. Mm-hmm. They are so pious. Wow. Yeah, they really are. They're inspiring. Anyway, but I also belong, I consider myself to hold dual parishionership, because I go to a parish in New York City. It meets monthly. Now they have a second place, so maybe twice a month. And it's a woman priest-led mass.
You're going to hell. You know that. You're going to hell. I'm sorry. I mean, I don't know a lot about Catholicism. You're going to a mass. That's a coven. Okay, it's not a parish.
Oh, no. Now listen. These women were ordained by bona fide bishops who are
in
with
the Catholic Church. In the,
yes, they are anonymous. I mean, of course, they can't reveal.
How can they be bona fide and anonymous?
They are bishops. They follow the apostolic succession, if you remember that term.
I really do know.
And they ordain these women because they believe in it. And so there are parishes. Unfortunately, there isn't one in Connecticut, so I have to trundle in to New York City.
This is a parish, like, in a church?
It's not in a church because
okay.
The Catholics won't let them.
Right.
But it's in a very good church with a long history of do-gooding. Do you know the Judson Memorial Baptist Church?
No, I don't.
Okay. It's right on the cusp of Washington Square.
Oh, how nice. Okay.
It's awesome.
I lived on
you and
Street.
I should go there.
Very well. Yeah.
Let's go.
Let's go. I'm not going to hell.
No? Okay. You know, when the Wesleyan chaplain, the newest one, came on board, I had him on the show. And we had a nice chat. And then afterward, I'm walking him to his car. And he wanted to know, what church do you go to? And I told him just what I told you. Well, I belong to this. And da-da-da. And then I also belong to this woman-led parish. And he goes, oh, so it's not Catholic. I go, oh, no, yeah, it's Catholic. It's Catholic. And he looked at me like, we'll talk.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the whole thing. I mean, it's really, you know.
I'm Catholic in my, small C Catholic in my approach to big C Catholic.
Right, exactly. But that's so. To me, this stuff is fascinating. I mean, I really do. I take a real interest in this. And, you know, I think that I think there are a lot of people who feel the way I do.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, I consider myself entirely generic.
Yes.
And, you know, I really do feel. I feel like if I feel something, there are a lot of people who feel this way.
I think you're right.
And just don't have maybe the nerve to say it out loud or,
yeah.
You know, whatever. Or they have shame, which clearly I've abandoned. And so I think a lot of people would love to feel like they could come back without a caveat. But, you know, the idea that your church with the women has to be held outside of a church.
Yeah, I know.
Real. It's like the original Protestant movement. This is like, you know, nailing the edict to the church door.
Yeah.
I mean, you are protesting. This is a Protestant.
Right.
You know, I mean, so unless the church says, like, yes, okay, you're allowed to use, it's like, I don't know, I guess I think of it as, let's say, heaven is a big VIP club, and the Catholics, you know, you get it, you go, I'm with them, and they open up, like, the red velvet line.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I don't think your church gets in the red velvet line. You?
Yeah, that reminds me of a joke about a guy who goes to heaven, and he's getting the tour from St. Peter, and everybody's having a great time, big party, you know, just joy and love, everything. But then they get to this door, this closed door, and St. Peter says, okay, you have to be very quiet. The Catholics are in there. They think they're the only ones.
Oh! Oh, that's really nice. I have heard most jokes. I haven't heard that one. Oh, that's really fabulous.
You can use it.
I will. I'll quote you.
No charge.
That's wonderful. That's great. Now that's, you know, look, I'm. This is what I tell myself about heaven, husbands. This is what I tell myself about heaven, is that I really do believe that if there's a heaven, that the way you get in is by accepting joy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that there's a God out there that's anything like what I hope God is and dare to believe God is, that you don't get judged by the stuff you do wrong. You get judged by if you've used every opportunity and possibility for joy to give it, to use it, to bring it to other people, and that it's not dwelling on the misery and dwelling on what can't be done, but of using your time well that's been allotted to you. And I'm going for that.
You know what? You're reminding me, since you're talking about heaven, that you have a really good quote. I scribbled it down about heaven. I'm going to read it. It says, "Heaven makes you a family, but a new generation of selective serotonin uptake inhibitors can make you friends."
Exactly. That's right. That's one about like sisterhood and dealing with your family members, right?
Yeah. You know? Oh man.
God makes you family, but drugs can actually make you friends. Yeah. That's the way it works.
Oh man.
Thank you for this, Maria.
No, we're not done. We have time, and I am going to use every minute.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah. So since I'm looking at my notes here, and we're going to just leave off the subject of God and heaven, although I do want to tell you one thing that's kind of funny. I'm sorry. When you talked about the express mail with the tracking number, you know, how you think some people have that kind of connection to God, it reminded me of my late mother. She was in the hospital for some reason, and the chaplain came by, and she said, "Well, please pray for me because you have a direct line."
Yeah.
And he replied, "Well, it's not that I have a direct line. It's that I pick up the phone more often."
Oh, that's nice.
Isn't that nice?
That's nice. I think it's more like politics where you have to donate. I think like the big donors, they seem to take those. But that's a nice line.
Okay. Yeah. So the other topics in your book, and it really covers the gamut of life. You must talk about men and breakfast.
Yes, that men are ahead of the breakfast domain. That every guy I know knows how to make a great breakfast. He thinks he knows how to make the breakfast. If every guy goes, "It's my special omelet," and it's like two eggs with like, a single Kraft cheese slice, and suddenly he's a gourmet cook. You know, I mean, this is, but that man, and certainly my husband makes, but he really does make a great breakfast. He worked at a diner when he was a kid, and he really can, you know, rustle up a great breakfast. But every guy is like, "No, I'll make that bowl of cereal like you've never had a bowl of cereal before." It's like,
wow. By putting bananas on it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's just so that men are the masters of the breakfast domain is one of the essays in the book. And that just comes from, 50 years of listening to men say, "No, you've never had a breakfast." They may not make any other meal in their entire lives, but they are king of the breakfast. Their toast, best toast. I mean, some of they all sound like Donald Trump when they're cooking. It's the best. It's huge, this breakfast. And they just, it was just one of those observations that then people really, went with, and they all really liked it. But it was one of those ordinary experiences that people have but didn't know that everybody else in the universe was having exactly the same experience.
Exactly. So since we're on the subject of the differences between men and women and the way we categorize each other, you have a good line here where you have some guy back when saying, "Hey, if we don't start
compartmentalizing.
Thank you.
Start compartmentalizing women, they're going to be all over the place."
Right?
Right. Absolutely. And this is also, I mean, again, not to go back to theology, but this is the Adam and Eve thing. No, let's blame her. This is how we know that if there is a God, she's female. Because no female God would make the first rule a diet. No male God, male God said, "Here's the first thing, don't eat this." No female God would begin life on earth by saying, "Here's something you can't eat."
Oh, that's so great.
A guy thing. A woman looks at an apple, she goes, "It's good, it'll help clean your teeth, it's good for digestion, it has fiber, you can make it into a pie, you could eat it with cheese, little cinnamon." Male God, "Don't eat this." Right?
It's so great.
Yeah, not that I'm bitter. But, yeah, that's really, so, yes. No, compartmentalizing women is really, and we do it to ourselves now. They don't even have to do it to us. We just do it naturally.
Right. Immediately, I think, well, there's only 60 calories in there.
Exactly. I know. We just do it to ourselves. But we compartmentalize ourselves. We think women can't do this. We say, oh, I think that's a man's job. I mean, all of these things, we have been so straitjacketed by the culture. Even if we weren't brought up that way, I mean, I was, but even if, you know, girls that I'm teaching now, young women in my classes, you know, even if their families brought them up to think more freely, you know, the culture is out there. You could grow up in a house without pets or plants, but the minute you go outside, you start to sneeze because there's pollen in the air. So you can raise people in a home or a family that's free of those kinds of things. But once they get out in the world, they encounter them. And so, you know, you have to be skinny. You have to be a certain kind of pretty. You have to have hair that looks a certain way. You have to have a certain kind of body type. Your voice has to always sound like you're asking questions, even when you're making declarative statements, because otherwise people are going to think you're too assertive. You know, I mean, it's just we need to help people get over this.
I would love to take a course with you. Oh,
you're welcome.
Gosh. I
mean,
bet your class.
You know, I'm teaching creative writing. It's on Tuesday nights. It's fun.
In stores.
It's stores at University of Connecticut.
Let me take a look at that.
Yeah.
We have maybe a minute left, and I just love this line. It's a little serious, I think, and I didn't even write down enough to tell me what essay it came from or apropos of what it is. But you talk about, quote, pathways to each other that rest beneath both of you, like power lines buried under the earth, unseen and silent.
Yeah.
Is that about marriage?
I mean, the power, the buried power lines is always a big image for me.
Talk about that.
It's because I think that there are the obvious connections either between people or between events, but it seems to me that a lot of the deeper connections are the ones that, like power lines under the earth, that we don't see, that we aren't even aware are there, but are the ones that are the most fundamental and that feed our lives, or like they're underground waterways or whatever image you want to use. But they're the ones that are most profound and give us sources of what's crucial to life without being able, without calling attention to themselves, and that we have to look for them. So that the connections that we have between other human beings, even if we don't understand where they come from or why they're there, are the most important forces in our lives.
Wow. Well, you know, in this particular moment in our history as a nation, that feels like really important wisdom.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Maria. It really...
because there's
again,
so much static.
The whole book, if you lean in, Women Just Look Down Your Blouse, despite the flippant title, everything is really from the heart. It's a book that I'm proud of, and it's a book that I think will make people laugh, but I'm so happy that you also see it as books people think.
I couldn't put it better.
Thanks.
Gina Barreca, my new best friend.
Absolutely.
Thank you for this. I know you're a busy lady, and I just feel so lucky to have been able to share this hour with you.
I feel that way, Maria, and let's do it again.
Absolutely, with a bottle of wine.
Okay, absolutely. But we can also do it on the radio and a bottle of wine. We can do it on the radio with a bottle of wine.
And then we'll go to church.
And then we'll go to church. An official one. I want to go to church.
Oh, all right.
All right, babe.
Thanks, Gina.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. That was a chat with the delightful author and columnist Gina Barreca, whose most recent collection is If You Lean In, Will Men Just Look Down Your Blouse? If you missed the episode, you can find it online at reasonablycatholic.com. I can't resist mentioning that Reasonably Catholic has officially embarked on its fifth year, and that I'm so grateful to you for listening. Back in 2 weeks with a program about human trafficking. Till then, I'm Maria Johnson. Stay tuned for The Jive at 5 and Acoustic Blender with Bill Revel.